This is session number 110.
And it's
August 5th, 2009. It's with Bob, maybe Carolyn.
And we're starting at 6:31 p.m.
Hawaii time. And it's copyright 2009, New Grandview Incorporated, all rights reserved. Greetings, Ion.
Good morning.
All right, Ion. What is the difference between the dreamscape and the landscape and something that JW was talking about?
Okay, very simply put, there's a technique or concept that we could engage if you'd like, and you may have questions regarding it, but we'll get you warmed up a little.
Okay.
Basically, is what if human individual creators in their dream world, because many people dream, actually, truthfully, everybody dreams, just some people don't have cognizant, what you call, total recall regarding it.
Yes.
But in that beta stage of REM sleep, you have what you call unconscious or subconscious activities known as dreams, and that your scientists can do an EEG in like a sleep study, and they can tell by their equipment when you are dreaming.
Yes.
See, they can tell you when you are dreaming.
Right.
Whether you remember it or not, you see, because of those wavelengths that are evident in their equipment, you see.
Yes.
Okay. So, if that's the case, and it's an established mean that people could embrace. Now, if you push against it, then don't worry about it because it won't come up in conversation. But if you're interested in it, then there's a dynamic that is a possibility that we would like to engage. And that is, what would your world look like, feel like, be like, if you somehow could embrace a dreamscape? That means a dream that you can see, maybe an activity that you engage in within a dream. What if you had the power, ability, and capacity to turn that dreamscape and make it into a physical, manifested landscape in this world that you're living in right now?
Make it manifest here.
Yes.
Bring the dreamscape into the physical world here, the conscious.
Into the landscape. Now, you may have to do that vis-a-vis the mystery body if you don't understand it, but that's okay because now you've established that there is a mystery body.
Yeah.
Which was a landscape, but now it's a body.
Yes.
Now, that's we're using your words because then you'll embrace that easy.
Yeah, the landscape is an idea. It's quite huge. It becomes a body when it's part of you becomes shrunk.
Yes, that's correct. So it's very interesting to dabble with this just a little bit. If you had the power or the know-how, or like when they made Lee Majors the Bionic Man from 100 years ago.
Yes.
They always started off as, we have the technology. We have the information. We have the capability. And so then they took Lee Majors, who was all blowed up, and they made him the $6 million man.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that would even pay his taxes now. But in those days, $6 million man was a big deal.
Yeah.
All right. The bionics of the process, you see. Now, if you could embrace this process and consider it simply, nothing hard, nothing protracted, nothing aberrated, just to simply easily, if you can make your dreams come true, oh wait, that's a new thing. Isn't that what people already talk about? That
yes.
They want their dreams to come true?
Yep.
Well, isn't that sort of what we're discussing here? But when we say it that way, all of a sudden, no, that's just esoterical. Glibbery?
Gibberish.
That? Well, not gibberish, but being glib.
Oh, okay.
You see?
Yeah.
So glibbery, and
yes.
That's another, we're just butchering your English language. Let's do it in French for a while, Bob. Maybe we'll do better with French than we're doing with your English. But anyway,
yeah.
If you could embrace that process and could not have anything to push against in that simple statement of knowing that we're discussing, and what we're discussing is what if you could take a dreamscape and convert it into a landscape? Mm. And we say landscape because we want it to be from a landing.
From a landing?
Yes, a landing-scape.
Oh, you want it to be a landing-scape?
A landing-scape, not as in land as in terra firma, but in your physical presentness, okay? In your physical presentness. Let's take your example, if you don't mind. If you don't have a problem with the metaphor here, we have one that might be fun.
In other words, landing-scape, the phrase needs a metaphor?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
And just to keep it simplified, let's say that you were living in New York City.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's say you were happy there, as happy as you were anywhere, and it was as good a place as any place. And let's say one night you went to bed and you slept well, you'd eaten good, everything was good, you'd been to the downtown walking around and came home, done your errands, blah, blah, blah. And you had a dream, and you, let's say in that dream, you decided that in your dream that you somehow were living in Maui.
Okay.
And let's say you dreamed it specifically that you could see the house you were living in, you could see the view that you were looking at, you would notice the Grand Wailea, and you'd never heard of the Grand Wailea before in your whole entire life up until that point in your dream world. You saw the other people in your community. You walked. You saw the pathway that you enjoyed going to the beach. You had a Snicker bar at the stand down at the beach. And let's say you have this dream, okay? And it seems pretty lucid because you know every aspect about it, okay? And you had this dream, and you go to bed. You have the dream. It's amazing. Sometimes you can dream things many times. Carolyn used to do that all the time, where she'd dream the same dream over and over and over.
Okay.
Back in the past. But, and some do, but it's not required. Let's just think it was one crazy dream.
Right.
And you wake up in the morning, and you get, sort of ramble around and get something to drink and sort of, you know, get your world going along as you're going. Bring the clothes down that are going in or out or whatever as you're processing the day. And Carolyn comes through. She'd been up for hours, and she comes through. Hi, Bob. And you're like, because it's morning.
No, I've never, I'm conscious.
Well, I understand, but...
But it was a dream. Maybe I'm a little, from the dream.
Maybe, but she's frisky in the morning, and it takes you a little bit to get started.
No way. I'm frisky immediately.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But maybe not this time because of the
You're
dream.
Engaging conversation.
Yeah.
And you go, Carolyn, I had the weirdest, strangest dream. And she may even stop long enough to say, what is it, Bob? And maybe not. Or I'm busy, or I'll see you, or we'll talk about it, or whatever. But she might engage you with it. And you could, with clarity and detail, describe every aspect of this experience of moving and living and being in Hawaii.
Yes.
And she goes, wow, that's pretty interesting. Okay? Now, if you took that dreamscape, now we're using that word as a dreamscape, as a lucid dream experience that you are aware enough of that you could give the details down to the address.
Right.
Where this house is.
Yes.
Which beach it is, which direction the view is pointing, you know what I mean, every aspect of it that's very clear, okay? And then you decided that you would like to, and maybe it was such a wonderful experience that you would actually like to have that as your new particular landscape in which you live.
Okay.
You don't know how you're going to get there. You don't know how it's all going to work out. You don't know which planes are going to fly. You don't know if Carolyn's willing to go with you or not. You don't know any of that. All you know is that you had this dream, and it's a dreamscape, and you've now considering that this might be something you'd want to embrace. And it would be odd because you'd know too much about the whole process.
Right.
For example, you decide to jump on a plane that's going to Hawaii. You don't know a soul. You don't know how to get from the airport to this place. You don't know spit about it. But you figure out somehow and you navigate your way and you just kind of know by your feeling place that you would even know if they were kind of driving you around looking at different things to consider, or you may have looked at it on the internet or something like that. Then you get into this place and you walk in and you walk in and they say, here's the house that we're going to show you. And you go, that's very nice. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time and helping me. But what about this house? And you point across the way.
Yeah.
And they go, well, that one's actually not available. And you said, but I'd like to see that one. Because in your dreamscape, that's the one that lined up with what you were looking at now as your perceivable landscape.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, it works itself out. That house indeed does become available, and they're not coming back for a while, and blah, 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 blah. And then the realtor calls somebody, and the next thing you know, you're moved in and on your way down to see Beach Bob and get your Snicker bar and enjoy Holy Old Beach.
Yeah.
And now, that would light up for you if you could, if you had the ability to take a dreamscape and modify it into a landscape. Now, see, that was a little metaphorical, but when we tell the story that way, it becomes very simple and easy, does it not?
So why'd you call it landscape?
Well, because it's where you arrive.
Okay. From the promptings of the dreamscape.
Correct. And we use that as a landscape because it might not be something as significant as moving from New York to Maui. It might be going to have an urge to go see a movie and meet someone outside the movie that becomes a very engaging process. For example, you might go to this movie from a dreamscape and bump into Marshall McLuhan in a landscape. And to sit and have an afternoon chat with Marshall would be pretty exciting to you, would it not?
Yeah. You're saying this, I go from the dreamscape, wake up, and the landscape is something that happens in the physical world.
Can. And where the question is what if that were a possibility?
That would be interesting.
It would be, and something you could embrace.
Well, it sounds like riff riding and going to the parallel world.
It is. But it doesn't have to be. It can be a lucid dream or a dream, because, see, we didn't pick a difference between a dreamscape. You take it with face value wherever that is. But that dreamscape can be converted into your landscape or a landingscape to the point that it can have a causal effect of your knowingness, your presentness, your life to make a change.
Yeah, just a side note, there's this architect, artist, designer named Arakawa, and I knew him in New York City, and he and his partner were designing pretty different buildings, but they had a whole book on it. And one of their key explanations of creating a new kind of architecture was the phrase landing sites.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. Landingscape. Is that what we've been saying? Landingscape.
Mm-hmm.
So that just passed in my mind. I just want to say that. So the riff riding, I understand you can practice what you want in this world here. In a parallel world, rehearse it, work out the bugs, and then it goes smoothly over here.
Yes.
That.
Or it can be, you can have something you want to play with, and you go over there, do it, and hate it. Then you know that is not an experience that you'd like to embrace
here
in this world.
Yeah.
So, see, it's not always, you see, obviously you can try something out, you know.
Yeah, now, we've talked about that many times.
Yes.
And now you're saying another way to image it is, instead of adjusting oneself to the notion of going to parallel worlds, just work with your dreams.
Yes, because see, if you push against were our words,
yeah,
and it eliminates it from your possibility, we don't want you third man out just because a word that we use doesn't line up with your present state of knowing.
Yeah. So the...
We could do it another way. We could say, in order to rip ride, you have to join a Pentecostal church and take up the serpent and dance with the serpent. And if you do that, then you can engage in interdimensional travel. Well, if you had a problem with snakes, that might eliminate interdimensional travel from your proximity of reality.
Yeah.
But if we soften it to say that you don't even have to think about snakes to be able to do that, and you have a phobia with snakes, and see, that puts you back in the game.
Yes, so...
That was a soft analogy, but still was.
Yeah, so what... So if I had that dream about Maui and then woke up, what prompted me...
No, let me say this a different way. Let's be a little more clear. You did have that dream, Bob.
That's how partly how I got here.
That's how you found the house you're in now.
Right, and we... But I don't remember waking up and talking about it.
I know, and it's okay.
Right.
You just don't remember your dreams, so yeah.
But in the dream, waking up and talking to Carol about it is not part of the dream. That's what happened.
Right.
As you laid it out. But I don't remember that. The thing
well,
is...
Well, did you just go to bed one day and then the next day you got up and moved to Maui?
No.
Well, a lot of things. Did you discuss it with Carolyn at all?
Yeah, it was discussed. Yeah.
And it was okay?
Yeah. I had no problem. Well,
you didn't care. Carolyn said we were moving to the North Pole. You'd say, okay, when do we leave? You know?
Maybe. I don't know.
You might have a concept. You might have a question or two. It's like, well, what's it going to be like here? And she'd say, no, Bob, we'll worry about that when we get there. And you'd say, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, I mean, you know, that's just, and that's sweet because it is allowing at its best.
Yes.
There's no fear of an unknown in your world.
Right. Now, we came to Maui before we moved here. That sparked an interest in it. So, would the dream be after we first
before.
Came to Maui? It was before. Okay. So you're saying making dreams come true. Dreams can come true, and they often do. But what is the point here you're making? You're saying this
that it doesn't require Jiminy Cricket singing the song of some as when you wish upon a star.
Right. It doesn't require too much rulemaking to...
Correct. But it's embraceable from all rules and regulations that you quantitatively apply.
All right. What is your point in bringing this all up? You trying to make riff riding softer?
We're trying to embrace all basal realities, basal in phases, basal realities that can simplify, ease, and promote a condition called RNA, relax and allow. And there's that nasty word again.
Mm.
Don't say it every single time.
Not nasty, boring.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
That boring task that allows you everything that you want when you want it in your own sense of reality, that you allow it into your experience. Boy, that just sucks, doesn't it, Bob?
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the advisory that all suggestions and answers
go. Every time.
What?
And it's going to come every single time.
All answers.
And you know, it's interesting. you're bored with it, and yet most humans still don't do it.
Yeah, well, you know, I do it, so...
I understand, but isn't that interesting? Now, we're done with hearing about this, because we're done with this, because enough. We know everything is about relax and allow.
Yes.
And yet, relax and allow is the furthest thing from your reality that you don't want to hear about to straighten out the last mess that you're into, that you want to be out of, that you wanted to be into, or you wouldn't have gotten there from there. And then the contrast that it brings to bring you back into a place where that's the same way you get back home is by the way you went involves some tactility regarding the statement of relax and allow.
Yes.
So then we even softened up relax and allow. How about that?
Very good.
Okay. So in that place, if it, anything, everything that can soften your pushing against anything, it puts you much closer in the vibrational proximity of it becoming a manifested reality or creation in your experience.
Did you say to push against? The phrase isn't there, but I missed the...
Yeah.
Words.
Anything that you use that'll soften your position to push against something.
Yeah, okay.
It can be dreaming, it can be masturbation, it can be holding ice cubes, it can be running cold water, it can be jumping in a swimming pool, it can be riding in a race car, it can be jumping out of an airplane, it can be taking up the serpent, it could be speaking in unknown tongues, it could be electrocution, it could be anything, everything, and whatever that is, it allows you the ability to relax and allow and embrace a concept, thought, idea, then those are the things that you can be, do, or have. But then we've already established pretty significantly that you can do, be, or have anything. Well, we want to include anything in the broader perspective of anything.
Mm.
Anything. Not no thing. Anything. Not something, but anything. Any type of thing that you'd like to do, be, or have. So, if that's interdimensional travel through riff riding, through lucid dreaming, through remembering that process that you are accomplishing, then if it's taking a dreamscape and turning it into a landscape, fabulous. That's the fastest path to your joy. It can be if you don't have anything against it, you see. But now it might go against your religious beliefs to actually have a dream. So if that's a problem, then forget the dreamscape business because you've already eliminated it from your potential reality.
Yeah, now... I understand not only is there two of everything, there's a lot more of everything. So there are many more selves of ourselves.
There are.
How does that...
Let's call it aspirations of yourself, because if you have push against that, then see, you're eliminating your possibilities. So we agree. Your words were perfect, but we just soften it just a little bit so it doesn't wrap somebody and go, oh, this is that devil worship. I knew it. It's the devil. It's the devil, Bob. I knew it, what it was. This is soothsaying. This is crystal ball, crystal licking, new age dogma that runs your karma right out of your experience and steals your soul right out of your life.
Yeah.
You see, so we want to make sure that we're easy with that whole dynamic so it's not a... We don't want to engage any tactility. Now, we don't have a problem with that. But at this stage of the game, we're just trying to soften so you can think about it a different way so that you could come back and someday when you're waiting on your prince to come, you'll know it when he shows up. Disney did a fabulous work softening from a child's perspective their means that they were trying to embrace. I mean, there was nothing sinister with Jiminy Cricket. Cinderella didn't really have any issue or problem. It's no communist plot.
Now, are there aspirations of yourself? Because every thought you think of yourself becomes a person, a being?
Yes, but sometimes it becomes a was-ism.
A leftover.
Yes, a was-ism.
It's not around anymore.
Correct.
But nothing is lost.
No, but you can redefine your wantings of your creation and adjust it. You see, you can get to a certain body weight and hold that weight, or a certain age and hold that age, and or a certain feeling place and stay in that. And then once you, here we go, here's an example. You have the, you want the creation that you want to sleep with every woman that you look at.
Right.
If you look at her, you want to sleep with her.
Yeah.
Okay, you can manifest that, and then all of a sudden you are just sleeping with everybody. Wonderful, great. But then after a little time, you can redefine that process. Redefine it and go, you know what, I'm sleeping with everything that'll be still. And it's fine. I enjoy sleeping with people. It was my creation. It was the closest vibrational proximity to that reality, and I'm enjoying it very much. However, I'm kind of getting weary with waking up with somebody different every single day, every single night. So now, I would like to adjust or amend my feeling place. If I'd like to settle down with the special woman, one who loves me, knows what I like, knows what I want, knows my ins and outs, knows that I'm not going to pick up my underwear and I'm going to have it in right there where I take it off in the dressing room, and that's where it's going to be. And knowing that I'm going to want my food done a certain way at a certain time, and know that I want to have a relationship with one human being and complete it to the place that it becomes oneness. And I can sleep with it. I'm having relations as many times as I was when I was sleeping with everybody, but it becomes more significant because now I'm enjoying that same amount intimacy. Mm. I'm having the same amount of intimacy, but I'm enjoying it more because it's with the same person that I already love and like to be with and around anyway. So you can change it. That's the point of that little synoptic version.
You can change the millions of cells you have.
Yes, you adjust them and decide which one is the fastest path to your joy. But when you arrive to it, it's not over because you can't get it done and you never get it wrong. So once you get there, you can decide, yes, I really did want a White House, and now I have a White House, and then I realize that we live on a dusty street and it picks up the dirt. So now I think I would like a tan house. Well, that doesn't mean that you've uncreated the White House. It just means that you now would like to change the color of the house from white to tan for maintenance purposes, and it would look better in your neighborhood.
Why does one never get it done? The other half of the phrase, I don't remember. Anyway, he just said, you never get it done.
You never get it wrong.
Yeah.
There is no wrong. There is no evil.
Never get it wrong, but you also never get it done.
Correct. And that's why you never get it done, is because you never get it wrong.
And that's because there is no time?
Well, no, that's because you are eternal. We'll get rid of this. We'll quit talking about how there's no time and start talking about how there is eternity.
Okay.
That's easier, because now you're eternal. And if you're eternal and you can get it done, then that would cease eternity. And if you got it wrong, then you may have to go to hell with those unruly Christians that didn't make salvation. Mm. It's interesting that they call themselves Christians, but they don't make salvation. It's very confusing because you can't get there. There is no hell. Well, no, now let me be clear. The only hell there is the one that you, God, create.
So yeah.
We've got to make space for it. But it's not that you're sorting out the evil ones among you. It's that you find a way to accept someone where they are. And if where they are is not up to your standard of excellency, that's okay, because you aren't exactly where you want to be completely, always, every time, anyway, either. You see, sometimes you want to go to the bathroom and there's not one handy. Well, if you're that, if you can't get it wrong, so if you go and urinate on a tree, then that's not wrong. Okay? Now, it may be against the law as far as being indecent exposure, but at the same time, you know, it is what it is. So you can't get it wrong. You can't mess it up. It may not be what you had in mind after you created, but that's okay because you just recreate and uncreate your feeling place. Can't undo the creation, but you can undo the feeling place that caused you to manifest the creation to start with.
Right. Now, in the dreamscape, which is the parallel world one goes to in some cases, and you're saying lucid dreaming is one of the ways to describe that, are there electrons and protons in the dream landscape?
There are.
How
What do you think causes those wavelengths in the beta waves to be registered and calculated? See, that becomes a logarithm. Well, that's examples of the protons and the ions and the neurons snapping.
Is there an essential mirror at the bottom of matter and consciousness and the parallel worlds? Is the mirror the essential original particle?
No. No. We just gotta say flat out no.
Okay.
Now you can point it, you twist us around a little bit. We'll get you there because you're on point, but not quite from there.
Right. It's just that we have the dreamscapes. These parallel worlds are often just like this world, one that we're in, and it sounds like a mirror reflecting going on. Or why would there be?
And it can be, but that's not the reason why there's parallel worlds. It's because at the beginning, someone created a looking glass.
So what is the reason there's a parallel world?
Because of the duality of creation.
Yeah, and I'm thinking duality is what I mean by mirror, in a way.
And that's why we say it, you're very close to it. But some people don't understand. They see mirror is what I judge myself by.
Yeah.
Think about that. They look in a mirror to see how they look, so they'll see how other people are going to see them. But that's not how they are. People see them as they think they are.
That's right, and they don't acknowledge the mirror as a looking glass, looking through a window.
So if you said that the looking glass was the base of it, we might have been easier to sort of get you there. But see, we had to clean it up, because otherwise, if you're not careful, you set a whole false premise up that if I'm happy with who I see in the mirror, then I can have interdimensional travel and be happy over there. Isn't that what your Christian church? Everybody will be happy over there.
Yeah.
Well, why? No, they won't. If they're not happy over here, then I assure you firmly, with much voracious confidence, that you also will not be happy over there if you can't find a way to be happy right here, right now.
Right. Now, why is the basic structure of existence or consciousness a duality?
We're sorry. Say it again, please. It's time for the train.
That's a great sound. Often on many of our ION sessions, many recorded sessions, is that sound. I was just trying to ask, why is duality the basic structure of consciousness, being, existence?
Okay, good. Good. And I'm going to stop you right there because I got it, and that's enough.
Yeah.
Because the basis of every choice is, or the basis of every conversation is two conversations.
That's right. That's the basic tool of everything.
It is, because, and see, it's not wrong, you see. Because it's not right or wrong, it's right or left. You see, because you take a left doesn't mean it's wrong. Because otherwise you'd only turn right. because right would be right and wrong would be wrong. Well, there's no wrong. Now, there might be a different tactility that's engaged by that. You see, you could be chopping up a tomato, slicing a tomato, and you could come to the conclusion that it might be in the fastest path to your joy to cut your arm off. Okay? Well, that's not wrong. It may cause you some contrast. Okay? Mm. But it's not wrong. It's perfectly okay. You're so free. If you choose to cut your arm off, you certainly can. It's your please yourself, you see. Now, that's dramatic, of course, but and we're doing it for a point to say that if that sometimes accidents happen. Ha 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 ha. Accidents happen. And when you get your computer back, we'll look up accident and see what the defining genre is to an accident.
Yeah.
There are you may be caught unaware, but you will rarely ever be caught oblivious.
Okay, so when you say there are two conversations, underlying that, there are two thoughts.
At the well,
core
it,
point
at
is
least
two thoughts.
Two. At least two, yes.
And that's why you can't be oblivious.
Correct. Because you always get what you think about whether you want it or not.
There's always another aspect of experience that makes you think another is...
And when you get there, then you can say, Ion, I don't want that. I don't want that anymore. I already have it. I don't want it. I have it. No, the wanting is not from a point of lack. The wanting is from the new place that you go, okay, I'm there. That feels good. Now the next logical step is... And then the next logical step is... And then the next logical step is, and you build upon these dual choices that are always, even when you wake up in the morning, okay, you have choices. I'm awake, I'm alive, I'm happy, I feel good, everything's good. And it's not the fastest path to my joy to get up right now. Okay, so a choice is stay in bed. Or a choice is, no, I've got to get up. Well, if that's the fastest path to your joy, then okay, get up. And see, you get to choose. And guess what? Even if you make a choice that you're not happy with, guess what? If you get up and you didn't really want to get up, you can go your butt right back to bed. See, and that doesn't mean that the creation, the manifestation of getting out of bed is undone. It's just that now that you're up and you don't feel like being up right now, or you got a little premature with your action before it was the fastest path to your joy, it's not a problem to go back to bed. Same way, if you want to do your stuff and get your little stuff done and then take a nice afternoon and take a little nap, go take a nap. Rest, you know, follow that path, because you're going to get more done by following the fastest path to your joy than you are forcing yourself into these things through action that are not aligned first.
Right. So the fact that there's two of everything in the created world, that's what contrast is. That's part of the two-ness.
Well, the contrast comes from you, though, because you could get up and be happy about being up and that be contrastless.
Okay. So the basic
duality... doesn't have to be, but if there is contrast, then that just lets you know you're alive, because otherwise you wouldn't know you were happy.
Right. So the basic duality is necessary, because you wouldn't know you were unless there was a sense of the other.
And we would clear this up even better and say, if you were a better definer, you wouldn't have near as much redefining to do.
Yeah.
For example, if you make a choice, whatever the choice is, and go with it, and you're aligned with it before you take the action, and it comes out the way you know it's going to come out, because that's the way it does every single time without fail or exception, and then that new place of coming is exactly what you had in mind, and guess what? You're very close to arriving at the proximity of the vortex of the proximity that you were trying to create to start with. Because the only reason that anybody does anything, any action, is for the thoughts that they'll feel better in the doing of
it. Right.
That's why you get a haircut, that's why you get new shoes,
right.
That's why you do everything.
Now,
is
there two of everything in the guff?
No.
So therefore you're...
It is not duality in the Gulf.
Right, so therefore you're oblivious in the Gulf.
Well, no, you have no contrast because it's all arrived. You don't have wanting. So if you don't have wanting, then you don't have duality, then you don't have the choice. That's why non-physical cannot create.
Because you don't have a choice.
Well, you don't choose a choice.
Yeah, there's all you allow on anything,
mm-hmm.
or which is everything.
Mm-hmm.
So,
the stasis is utopia. An ambiguous stasis of utopia. Now, that's a perfect world, okay? And the reason that that's perfect is because it is without contrast. So therefore, whatever state it's in is perfectly wonderful, fine with you. But the point is, the creator in you enjoys very quickly re-engaging in the physical to mix it up, to redefine creation as we know it, to engage, embrace, mix it up, have new experiences, learn new things, experience new worlds, experience new concepts, and experience new foods. It's just so delicious to go into the future and have wonderful things and take them back in the past and drop them off so people can find them. And, I mean, it just gets kind of delightful after a little while. It's fun. Now, we're going over the top because maybe we haven't thoroughly developed all of that at this particular time that we're sharing together, this span of now. But it certainly is relegated to ability to embrace it or to sort of sneak that in there. But might invoke other questions as it is indeed fuller developed.
Yes.
Fuller developed.
Yes, fuller. Fuller.
That's pretty fun. It's fun. Okay. We have great fun playing with words anyhow, so that's all right.
Okay, so the cliche image of heaven being boring, just angels singing, that's projected by the profane, the ones who are not interested in the religious view of an afterlife as some kind of utopia. I take it that whatever image we have of it, it ain't boring.
It's not boring. It's perfect, Bob, but the trick is that you have no contrast, so therefore you forfeit creation.
Are you aware?
You forfeit creating.
Right, but when you're in the guff, in the utopia, you're aware that you can leave and mix it up.
Yes.
There's a yearning within the utopia?
There is. That full cyclical action of now, we carefully engage the looking glass aspect. From the gulf, looking through, if that veil thinned enough, then you see the deliciousness that is, so much so that you come back as quickly as you go, okay? It doesn't have to be so long of a time, but then it doesn't matter because there is no time. Now, isn't it interesting? Creation must have something going for it. Otherwise, how is it possible that now you have 6 billion plus creating souls on your little ball of earth.
You got 6 billion people creating souls, creating vehicles for souls?
Souls that are creating.
Yeah, 6 billion are creating.
And it didn't used to be 6 billion. Was there ever a time in what you call recordable history where there were 6 billion plus on this planet?
Nope, not in recorded history.
Well, now wait. So therefore, if souls are exponentially increasing, isn't that the best example of the expanding universe of creation?
Yep.
Okay, so now let's see Armageddon. It's on its way. You've read Revelation 7, and you know all the details. And it's soon going to be over, and you'd hope for so much more. And two-fifths of the planet are going to croak, or whatever your number is. Okay. Yeah. Guess what? If that were to be the case, what you're calling a mass exodus to the Gulf, there would be so many babies born out of that aspiration of a physical experience that your global number wouldn't just go up a million or a billion, it would almost double.
Be 12 million. If two-fifths or half the world went, well, 3 million left.
40 points. 40 points out of 100, that's what two-fifths is.
Yeah.
If 40% or 4/2 left, you would, that effect, the causal effect of that happening would in effect cause more than doubling of the creators that come forth and that are present or live on your little ball of wonder.
And something like that happened during the Black Plague, where
it exactly happened during the Black Plague. Because we were hoping you'd get there.
Yeah, people get pregnant just touching arm elbows.
Pretty much. And here, then that's not the only time. After World War II, they even had a baby boom.
So
there, those born in that geography of that time, well, there you are. But of that mystery landscape, that you had all of a sudden a baby boom where you doubled, literally doubled, the number of U.S. American citizens in the span of a couple of, ever how long, what they call a baby boomer, you know, 10 or 15 years after the war.
46 to 64.
You doubled it.
Yeah.
Well, now, wait a second. You just had a world war, and the boys didn't even make it home, and they didn't make it home, and it was bad, and they forfeited their creation, so the ones that didn't believe the way Americans believed had to die. Well, then you got in this brace of this thing, and because of that reign of tyranny or terror or that process, it's okay, creation still moved on. You doubled your population.
Now, you suggested that there's not enough room in the guff around now. Too many souls.
But see, it increases. It always increases. Because you got to have enough girth or space for 6 billion to fit there at once. Because if the meteor comes and it's 280 miles across, then it's going to smack the earth and crumble it down back into confetti or silly putty or whatever it is that the science of the day is going to create for you. Well, there's got to be enough capacity for all the souls that are to be. But guess what? Don't you worry. You haven't destroyed this little ball yet. Try as you might, this regenerative process keeps finding a way through the ice ages, through the volcanoes, through the pollution, solutions, delusions, through all these different dynamics. The earth always finds a way, because the basic incremental part of the sustenance, the ashes to ashes and dust to dust part of you that is, resonates also with what you sometimes call Mother Earth.
So if actually...
Didn't expect that one like that, but I didn't in there, didn't we?
You say I didn't expect that whole last couple minutes, you mean?
Right.
That's nice. Comes to this thought, if actually the meteor hit and 6 billion, every human being went into the guff, died,
yep,
transitioned.
Yep.
And there is no couple left to procreate.
Yeah.
There still would appear humans on the planet.
How did humans get here the first time?
Yeah, not the way the scientists tell us.
Well, don't we not pushing against science? Science is marvelous, Bob. It tries to undo creation at every hand. It tries to prove that creation is not.
Well, isn't that, if you, Ion sometimes takes a dim view of our technological state right today, isn't that a manifestation of science trying to undo creation and obliterate correct. Everybody?
Correct, correct, correct. And they'd still be doing surgery with chainsaws, Bob, but they have a problem with the manufacturer of the chainsaws.
What happened with them?
Well, we're being cheeky again. Yeah. The chainsaws don't meet the criteria that science says is appropriate to be able to do an amputation. And you say, when a chainsaw will do it, promise, you don't even have to be aware of your sterile field.
If I
take a chainsaw to your leg and it will cut it off.
If I imagine souls leaving the guff, coming to the planet after everybody's been wiped out, it seems to me to be a missile of thought that just manifests, and thought shoots out of the guff and then shows up here.
Thought does not shoot out of the guff. Thought shoots out of you, and you have a non-physical, and that non-physical resonates with the guff, but the thought doesn't come from the guff.
Right. Could the it becomes like a trompe-l'oeil, the trick of the eye. Could the guff be inside someone's ear? The whole guff be inside someone's ear. And that human had the ear.
Well, Bob, you creators can do be or have anything. So if you would like the guff to be the corresponding size to fit into an ear, or let's use a thimble, that the entire gulf is the size of a thimble, you know, the thing you put on your finger to sew with, then you can do, be, or have. That is your experience.
The medium for that is thought.
Indeed. The medium of everything is thought.
Is thought a landscape, a dream landscape, a landscape?
No.
What is it?
It is. Oh, excuse us. It is the beginning place of all transmutated living through the mind that non-physical in the entire universe can embrace to activate a creation sequence within the physical creator.
Right. There's some dualism inside that definition.
There is, on purpose. But you notice how we were very clever how we tried to lay it out, because therefore, it doesn't have to be a creation, but it most absolutely can be a creation.
What? The thought? The product of thought?
The thought.
The thought. So that might be a way, if you look at the dualism, the two of everything at the core of that sentence. Chicken and the egg situation. That is where the mirror comes in. Was the mirror attempt to bring the two together? The looking glass.
We do so much more like the looking glass, because mirror, it says the words you're trying to say, but we just want to make sure that it's not pushing against. And sometimes mirror, they might have resistance regarding. But looking glass, see, then now you're going back to mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that becomes a little easier way to embrace that, in our opinion.
Yeah, it's a creative broadcasting faculty.
Correct. It seems softer.
Yeah, when you look through the window, you're helping to create the pattern.
Sure, because look, Bob, it's real simple. Every concept that we pour non-physical in brain gauge and bring forth in through your answering of your questions, you creators then get to sift even that and decide if that's live or if that's Memorex or if that's okay or it's not okay. Ion, there is no multi-dimensional worlds. There is no multi-duality. There is no looking glass. There is no God. There is no houses, there is no money, there is no chair, there is no tobacco, there is no drugs, there is no heat, there is no electricity, there is no right out of your experience. Okay? Now, doesn't mean you won't necessarily be judged by it, because, see, you set those rules up of what's allowable and what's not. So the forfeiture clause in any what you call problem issue area is set up and enforced by you.
All right. What you just said, even over the last 20 minutes, I'm talking about the relationship between you and you, the dualistic structure, the basis of creation in relation to the guff, all that. Is there any particular thinker that's been recorded that got the closest to articulating what you're saying? Or were there many thinkers, or every thinker, every writer came up
with
it?
Well, so many. So many, see, the answer is yes and no. The answer is no and yes. There are huge places of attainable, attachable, recorded means that are thoroughly embraced or declined.
Yeah.
Okay? See, one of the best ones ever is your James Joyce.
Yeah.
Some of the very best example. I mean, literally. And people don't even know. They don't even understand it enough. It might as well be from Kurt Vonnegut, but you call it Vonnegut. Far out so that it can't be achievable.
Yeah, we're talking.
Can't be embraceable. But and Marshall McLuhan, perfect. He was just a a stage man.
Now, are you getting that from me, or is that Ion agrees? There is something separate.
There is something separate, but we are getting it from you, and we do agree. So there's tons. I mean, there's good Lord, T.S. Eliot.
Yeah.
Homer. Shakespeare. My stars.
What about other, like a Chinese writer?
No, certainly. The works or the deists and the Buddhists and the monks that were doing the transcriptions and all those different ones that were attaching laudable conceptual means that became the life-giving words for an otherwise confused creator.
That's right. Otherwise confused creator.
Yeah. See, people get tangled up. They forget they're told that they're not the creator. So now it's got to be somebody else's fault. And then the government's got to do it. And then my mother's got to do it. And then, well, my granny's got to do it. Or my wife's got to do it. Or I couldn't do it, so my kids have got to do it. And it just kind of goes on and on, down to the commercial of, well, let's get Mikey to eat it. He'll eat anything. We don't want to eat this. This is icky. We'll get Mikey to try it. And then if it's no good, it'll be on Mikey, not on us. But then they still get, then Mikey likes it, so we can eat it too. But they still get to decide whether or not they like it or not. But yet Mikey, who hates everything, liked it. But they still had to decide for themselves, too. But they had a test run with Mikey because it was established that he hates everything. Mikey won't eat it. He hates everything. Well, Mikey eats it. He likes it. Okay. So now they use that as the excuse to then go through the same process themselves to get to decide that just because Mikey likes it doesn't mean necessarily I would like it. But because Mikey, who doesn't like anything, likes it, I've had a better shot at enjoying it.
So Mikey is like the archetypal scientist. Doesn't like anything.
Precisely. And so therefore, because someone who likes nothing likes something, that's certainly something that I would want a plate full of. But think about that a minute. For someone who hates everything, how could that be something that would be in alignment with where you are?
Right. Now, in the future, no, there's no time. Are we going, is Ion going to encounter a criticism from scientists after enough have heard these sessions? that it...
We don't care.
I know you don't care, but what is going to be their main objection to what you're saying?
We don't know.
We don't know yet.
There won't be. We won't object. There won't be an objection. There won't be an objection because their position is going to be that we're going to prove that there's no such thing as spirit man. We're going to prove by a hypothesis that there is no God. We're going to prove that creation doesn't take place. We're going to prove that babies indeed are not born. We're going to prove that the cognitive experience of God and God making babies is not true. We're going to prove that there is no DNA. We're going to prove that there is no RNA. We're going to prove that this particular recipe, there's no science to go around it, to prove that this should be in the IBS for Dummies cookbook. We're going to prove it, and we're going to show you, once and for all, finally, that it's wrong. And then what does the creator do? Gets right a hold of it, and everybody has a baby with IBS.
With ideas, did you say?
With IBS.
IBS, right.
See, that's the whole fun of this process. You can't run a mile in 4 minutes. Not doable. Can't do it. We're going to prove that you cannot run a 4 minute mile. And now everybody in the world is running a 4 minute mile. And that contrast is delicious, delightful, and wonderful. They clear these drugs and say they're safe, they're safe, they're safe. We've proven that they're safe. And as soon as they come out and say that, that's the ones that start giving you cancer and make you fall out and make you have sugar and make you leave your body and make your appendages fall off and give you privacy where you have erections lasting more than 4 hours. And Lord have mercy, just on and on and on. Now these are the scientifically proven ones. So we don't have any regard with what your science has or opinion regarding anything. But we're not going to push against the first one because that's going to set up the new creation scenario. It'll be the answer to the doomsday scenario.
They're
proving that we're doomed would solve the doomsday scenario.
That's why we don't push against it.
Never, never, never. That's just wonderful because all that does is make the creator come back and say, wait just a second. What do you mean I have to have a television in my house? No, it's a law. We have to be able to get you information and we have to be able to watch you in your house through your television set because we can see like you can see us, we can see you. And so we're going to make you have to have one. And after a little while, you're kind of going, okay, great, but you'll put the TV in your house and then build a wall around it so it's completely enclosed and I'm abiding by the law, but I don't watch it because even if it's on, it's in a box in a room all by itself that nobody's there. I had my TV installed in the attic. I don't spend a lot of time in the attic, but I've complied. I did what you said I had to do because we're going to prove the science of how this indeed is a healthy environment that be in my world of my reality. That was a stretch, but you see what
it is. Yeah, it's science will say ion's not even wrong.
Sure, well, but we're not interested. We're not impressed so far with how they're doing in this whole process of explaining to the creators their reality.
Right. So how big is the original thinking humans that created this world, the mountains, the rivers?
You mean
how big are they?
You mean their statue? Are they 4'8"?
Yeah. How big was the form that created the solar system?
About 4'8".
And so the dynamism of the thought, the imaging in the 4'8" person created the environment around it.
Okay, and so therefore, yes, and now we have a question. Then, in African-American basketball throwing world, how how did those players become a mean average of 6'6" tall?
They'll say, science might say nutrition, but...
They came from the ghetto, Bob. They were on food stamps. They only had simple carbohydrates. They didn't have organic in the ghetto.
Yeah. So...
It's not extra magnesium that did it, Bob, unless they were licking it off the playground.
So the alibi is to say thought, nebulous medium.
Well, the provable point is that they got exposed that they can make it if they learn how to take this little leather ball and throw it through this peg basket up on the wall that's nailed. And if they can do that, then they can do, be, or have anything that they'd like to do, be, or have. So they got a hold of that and said, okay, that's the rule, that, and they can embrace that. Now, was that true? Well, it's a left or a right. It's not right or wrong. It's a left or a right. Well, they embrace it, and the next thing you know, then if you're a little bit taller, then guess what? You're closer to that peck basket that you throw in the bowel through. So therefore, you beget and beget and beget, and the next thing you know, you're 6'6" or 6'8" or whatever.
There's a dream.
It's a mystery. It's a mystery how the creation finds a way.
Hmm. And it's, the dream is thought. So you have a dreamscape, which is a thoughtscape.
Yes.
And it can be made solid.
We like thoughtscape. That's a new word, Bob.
Is it?
Hmm.
Yes. Thoughtscape.
We were talking about landscapes. You're talking about thoughtscapes. That's interesting. But we couldn't go quite there. If we started with that, it would have been too cliche. See, it would have been too schmarmy or manzy-pansy kind of thing. So if we said that, that would be too yogurty, too...
Muesli. Muesli.
Muesli, yeah, too cottage cheesy.
But we had to go through the tension caused by the rants of Ion to get to the plateau of accepting the muesli.
There you go. To even embrace it, you see.
Yes. So,
because it's going to doom us all. Muesli is the what's wrong with the world, Bob. It's over. It's all muesli's fault, and muesli's what caused it all. And those that consume muesli must be of the devil, and they most certainly will end up in a pit of fire to burn for eternity, because they were one of those that embraced the muesli generation.
Yeah. And
well, how much sense does that make? Who cares whether you ground up goo?
Well, primitive cultures apparently never asked the question why.
No, but they did.
Oh, they did ask why.
If they never asked why, they'd never have a laudable understanding to change.
But their why was probably a different why than our why, unless all human consciousness
is different. They're asking, why do we have to go outside to defecate? Because we don't have indoor plumbing. It's true. Now you don't ask that question now. It's an understood place that if you have a house, then you have indoor plumbing that works. See, so you're not asking, you're not asking, how can I get back outside to the outhouse to go to the bathroom?
Nowadays, we're looking for a reason.
Why did we get rid of the outhouse and have indoor plumbing?
No, I didn't mean that. The general principle of looking for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Did primitive cultures who ask, they were asking about where to... eliminate themselves. Today, is that looking for a reason? Is that the concept?
It's good, but we don't quite understand looking for, you said to annihilate themselves?
I just wanted to see if you catch that. I said eliminate.
Well, yeah, because we're like, this is recorded, Bob, and we were born in the morning, just not this morning. So we wanted to make sure we were... it was a test to see if Ion was still conscious.
Yeah, that's right. Were there still two Ions? Were there still two conversations?
At least two, Bob. At the minimum two. That's correct. We can almost jokingly easily say, we are as many as you have choices.
So to alleviate themselves, anyways, all through consciousness, all the forms that exhibited humanity, were they always looking for a reason?
Always.
That's what you mean by why, or looking for a reason and looking a way to alter the apparent.
Yes, and see, they didn't care what the speed of light was in those days, so they wouldn't ask that. And now that it's been proven, science is in the process of undoing that even now.
Yeah.
That the speed of light is not 182,000 miles per second or per hour or per whatever time that they deem is appropriate at this new juncture. See, they didn't ask that question, but they did understand how many candles that it took to last, and calculating lumens of candlelight, that's what it's based upon even now, was how many candles it took to be able to read.
Mm.
It's candle power, lumens. It's how much light can fill a room. That's how you decide today what wattage light bulb is the correct application for what it is that you're trying to accomplish. So that's the same why.
Yeah, you're saying the speed of light meme began with that.
Correct.
Okay, so...
And the same thing with calculating hectares, acres, and spans. It would be the span of your hand. And but here's the problem with that. Everybody's span was different. But yet, that was the... If you bought a yard, that's what you could stretch, a material, you'd stretch from one arm out to the other. Well, if your arms were long, you lost money. And if your arms were short, you made money.
I want to bring in another aspect. We're coming near the end of the session here.
Okay.
And we began talking about lucid dreaming and the dreamscape. Now, you've brought up science in the last while within this session.
We've been on them the last little bit, haven't we?
Yeah. So I would like Ion to confirm, not that I want this to be confirmed, but I'm asking, but I've been given hints that a lot of the better scientists include the experience of parallel traveling in their mathematical formulas or definitions.
We would hope that would be the case, but the documentation flowing through JAMA these days does not point that way. Most of the ones that would come into the place of an understanding get real quiet real quick. They cease pushing against anything quickly.
In other words, it's one of the biggest secrets is what scientists, what the better ones or the more inventive ones actually experience compared to what they say matter
is. Well, it'll be interesting when they start taking up the school of alchemy.
You mean retrieving it? What's it mean to take up the school of alchemy?
When you can get a PhD in alchemy. You laugh, but where are all the polio doctors? You know any polio doctors?
No.
Ain't none. So, well, where did they go? Well, they're still polio. They still vaccinate for it. The people still get it and have it.
They went into researching AIDS.
Oh, okay. So, therefore, why couldn't you take on alchemy then and have the magic pill that cures all the ills? That seems a lot more fun. Then you don't have any aides or helpers either.
You're saying that the little ones coming in are going to be clear on, more energetic towards getting the magic pill?
Sure. Well, we've already given you everything you need to know to be magically and pilled. Then you could become a pillar of society.
So.
And that's P-I-L-L-E-R, a pillar of society.
I got it. Very good.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I did smirk and laugh, chuckle. So to wrap it up, who is someone who is conscious of the parallel worlds?
Groucho Marx.
All right. And experienced it.
Groucho Marx.
Right. And that's a good beginning. Who is someone that we might think in no way, based on their public image, and it's a well-known image, and therefore we'd be surprised, was a parallel world knower?
The Pope.
The Pope? The prison pope.
Mm-hmm. Well, all of them.
All of them. I recall when I asked you about the prison pope, if he was a...
No, let's go back to your question.
Yeah.
You didn't ask what the reality was, you asked what would be perceived.
Oh, yeah, someone that no one would expect.
Right.
That's right. Yeah, you're not saying the pope does it. But I'm saying, take someone that no one expects, like the pope, who actually is aware of parallel world traveling.
Well, they certainly have the dichotomy to understand it. They have all of the writings, the best historical references regarding it. They get the whole Monty, and then they sift it out to let you know what you're supposed to believe or not. See, how do you have this candidacy for sainthood?
How do you?
Well, they send it up, and you have to have so many miracles, and you have to have so many things, and then the church has to talk about it, and then you have to get referred, and then it goes through Vatican City, and they decide that indeed you are a saint. And then, guess what? If you're made a saint, then guess what happens? Then the church is supposed to pray to you.
Okay, we know that.
Now, they got all of it, but then they decide the part they're going to put out in the press release.
Right, they
so
cancel.
They certainly have the inroads of understanding that's embraceable. They just control it to the point so they can stay in. Well, we don't want to be forward and say stay in power, but in order for them to maintain power, everybody else has got to be stupid.
Gotcha. So we need.
That's the issue, and it's not a problem. And if they're doing it from love, that's as good a thing as any. Hey, works great, you know. But if that's all they're talking about is how you can figure out how to love yourself and how to love others, Jesus said if you can get that commandment, the rest of them you don't need.
Okay, got it. So who's someone we all know about in general that we wouldn't expect, aside from the Pope? Just surprise me. Who's someone who's a Rift Traveler or a Parallel World Explorer that may not be associated with that world at all?
The Ayatollah Khomeini.
All right. Then we are complete. Thank you, Ayatollah.
How very, very wonderfully delightful. And if you use this one in this format, the whole magic of this entire topic of conversation is for no other purpose or reason to align and to allow you into a place that you can have a seamless attraction with non-physical to your meat sack body, processed through the fulcrum of the balancer of your mind that can be appropriately become as one. That's the answer and the secret that answers all questions. This is just one of many.
Thank you.
Indeed.